Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Only at True North stores. New True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Paul Douglas back with you. Jordana at the Mayo Clinic. She's in our prayers. DJ producing today. There is a press conference that is imminent coming out of Texas with updates, the very latest on this horrific shooting. I mean, every shooting is horrific, but 14 kids dead, one teacher at an elementary school, and the shooter was an 18-year-old. Another update from CBS coming up at 4:20, and our newsroom is on this as well here at CCO. CBS News has learned that the White House is going to be announcing an executive order tomorrow on policing, marking the two-year anniversary that George Floyd was killed by former MPD officer Derek Chauvin. Now, this executive order may include collection of use of force data, a ban on chokeholds, and a restriction on no-knock warrants, possibly a blueprint for future legislation. Joining us, Stephen Belton, Urban League Twin Cities, recovering attorney and pastor. Is there anything else I forgot to add? Grandfather?
No, no, not grandfather yet.
No grandfather?
Not yet.
Okay.
Aspiring grandfather.
Yes. Well, when you least expect it, you get the news.
Isn't that the truth?
Good to have you here, Stephen.
Thanks. Good to be here. Good to be in studio.
Boy, I'll tell you. Yeah, it's night. The whole face-to-face after 2 years of Zoom meetings and, yeah, I take nothing for granted. And the cap you have on, the baseball cap, it says breathe love. And that's not a coincidence.
No, it's not. It's a war today with great intentionality. It's a slogan that's been adopted by my church and congregation, but obviously it has broad meaning for the society that we're in and for the moment that we're living in. With so much hate and so much hate that doesn't seem to have a direction or purpose. And it's a time when all of us, I think, need to be reminded to breathe, and to breathe love in particular.
Take us back to that day 2 years ago, your initial reaction, the immediate aftermath. I mean, I was in a state of perpetual shock. First of all, that this murder, this execution took place in broad daylight, and it was videotaped, and that changed the world.
Yep.
I mean, how many of these happen, you know, in darkness, in the shadows, and we never hear about them? But what was your reaction to the death of George Floyd?
So I literally was awakened from my sleep by my persistent ringing of my phone. And I don't remember if it was phone or text, but it woke me, and I someone had sent me the video, And my first reaction, you know, this is at 4 o'clock in the morning or so, Paul. So I was hardly awake, and I it was disbelief. I thought for a moment that I was perhaps witnessing or viewing a meme or something, you know, something awful someone had put together, but it didn't seem real. And it wasn't that, you know, the actions themselves were surprising to me. It was that, A, that it was caught on videotape. That didn't seem real. And frankly, I was just moved to disbelief by the inhumanity of it. It just seemed so obvious that George Floyd was crying out for his life and was being ignored by the four police officers who were around him. And it was just disbelief at the inhumanity of the entire thing. And so shock and disbelief, and then very quickly anger.
And again, the word murder is a charged word. And I'm sure some people will push back and say, well, you know, the cop was just doing his job, right? Derek Chauvin was just doing his job. I still encounter some of that, not as much as I did 2 years ago. But just to remind listeners, Derek Chauvin was in fact found guilty of second-degree unintentional murder. He was found guilty of third-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter. Three other officers on the scene convicted of federal civil rights offenses. There was some accountability. We could argue whether it was appropriate accountability. The city of Minneapolis's $27 million settlement with the Floyd family did send a message to police departments around the country, around the world, that actions have consequences. And now with smartphones, citizen journalists, security cameras, webcams, what happened in the shadows, now more times than not is exposed. There is usually justice, however belated. Do you agree with that premise or not?
I don't know that there's usually justice. In fact, I would disagree that there is usually justice. I think in this case, there was justice. Now, bear in mind, I'm not a relative of George Floyd. And for his family, for his closest friends, for his loved ones, no amount of penalizing the, you know, the perpetrators, the police officers who deprived him of his life, is going to give them a sense of justice. But from a community perspective, I think that we have seen justice, and I think justice continues to be rolled out. We'll continue to have it because the trials are not over, particularly of the three officers who were not Derek Chauvin.
Yeah, well said. Stephen, thank you. We're going to take an update here from CBS News about that. Another mass shooting, this time an elementary school in Central Texas. That's coming up next. Paul Douglas here. We joined the press conference underway right now in that mass shooting in Texas.
We have several injuries, adults and students, and we do have some deaths. The suspect is deceased at this point. DPS is assisting with the investigation. And at this point, the investigation is leading to tell us that the suspect did act alone during this heinous crime. Families are being notified, and we are providing services to them as the district should. As far as the rest of the district is concerned, safety measures were taken to make sure that we had a safe release for the rest of the district. Throughout our city of Uvalde, and we had numerous law enforcement officers and agencies that assisted with the safety release for those students. We do want to keep all their families in their prayers. I hope you do as well. And we also want to respect the privacy of the family. Everything is still being worked on, and again, we'll notify the parents and the families as soon as we have some news for them. Thank you so much.
We greatly appreciate and patience with us. Please know at this time, we are only making a statement. We will be releasing more information as the investigation continues. We appreciate your courtesy. At this time, it concludes our press conference. Thank you.
That was a very brief press conference in Uvalde, Texas, west of San Antonio, in the aftermath of another shooting at an elementary school, Robb Elementary School. 14 dead, including one teacher. Adam Carter here in Studio A with more perspective. Hey,
yeah,
Adam.
Yeah, forgive me. I didn't get the name of that police official or the school official, but as you said, very limited information from them. The information, the confirmation of the deaths came from Governor Greg Abbott about a half an hour ago, and that 14 children and one teacher at this Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, were killed after this 18-year-old man, apparently armed with a handgun and possibly a rifle, entered the school today and opened fire, killing these 14 children and one teacher. Motive not known at this point. The 18-year-old shot and killed by authorities after the fact. So we have a lot more questions as to about what happened leading up to this, what happened with this 18-year-old man. And CBS still obviously has a lot of investigators on this, a lot of reporters covering it, including some FBI contacts. Obviously, the FBI reporting, FBI investigating this as well. In fact, I think we'll go to CBS here just a few moments to get the very latest from CBS News. Again, 14 children, one teacher dead in a shooting at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas.
CBS News Special Report. Texas Governor Greg Abbott says 18-year-old Salvador Ramos opened fire, killing children and a teacher at a Uvalde elementary school.
He shot and killed horrifically, incomprehensibly, 14 students and killed a teacher. Mr. Ramos, the shooter, he himself is deceased. And is believed that responding officers killed him.
Police say the suspected shooter acted alone. Derek Gonzalez works nearby.
When we heard all this, well, all the neighborhoods started coming out, running to the school, because we know everybody has family there.
One hospital says a 66-year-old woman and a 10-year-old girl are both in critical condition. One Customs and Border Protection agent was also shot in the head, but is in stable condition at a local hospital. CBS News Special Report, I'm Steve Dorsey.
That was an update from CBS News on the shooting in Texas. When we come back, more perspective on the two-year anniversary of George Floyd's death with Stephen Belton, Urban League Twin Cities. That's next. Paul Douglas back with you on a somber Tuesday with the news coming out of Uvalde, Texas, west of San Antonio. 14 dead. My understanding, 13 elementary students and one teacher shot by an 18-year-old with an assault rifle, or a rifle and a handgun. Not sure if it yet if it's an assault rifle. Stephen Belton is here to talk about the two-year anniversary of George Floyd, and I promise we'll get to more of that, but Stephen, your reaction, something you told me when we were in the commercial break, resonated with me. Just the frustration. As a parent, as a grandparent, as a human being, you see these stories and you shake your head. I mean, what is it going to take?
Yeah, I honestly don't know. I know what could help. And that would be to have passed some meaningful gun control laws. And I need to say to your listeners that I am not at all an anti-Second Amendment person. I believe in the right to bear arms. But I also think that we need to be reasonable and responsible about that. 18-year-olds having access to assault-style weapons, and we don't know. It's not clear yet with the shooter in Texas what sort of weapons he had in addition to a handgun. But having access to weapons there, we need to be attacking this issue upstream. I had told you, shared with you, Paul, the story of it reminded me of the story of the two fellows who were on the banks of a river and they're fishing, and all of a sudden a baby rolls by downriver and they grab the baby and pull it out of the water, and then another one comes, and next thing you know, they're up to their ankles in water and their knees, and they're pulling babies out of the water, and suddenly one of the men gets up and walks away. And his friend says, "Where are you going?" He says, "I'm going upstream to find the son of a gun who's throwing babies in the water." And it seems to me that our reaction in this context is that we can either continue to pull babies out of the water, and literally that's what we're doing here in Texas, or we can go upstream and address the problem that allows people to attack the schools. I don't think the answer is to barricade our schools, to put more metal detectors in there. I think we need to go upstream to this issue, Paul, and begin to address meaningful gun control.
80-90%, I mean, depending on the poll you look at, a significant majority of Americans acknowledge the need for common sense gun reform. But even when you mention the word reform, yep, some people say, "Oh, they're coming for my guns."
Yep.
And they don't want to listen. What if Sandy Hook didn't do it? If this mass shooting at an elementary school doesn't do it, what on earth is going to get politicians off the dime?
Well, keep in mind, we are still haven't caught our breath from Buffalo, New York, where another 18-year-old shot 10 people, killed 10 people. And we don't know whether this was a racialized motive. I'm not judging, but what I've seen from the images on television is that it appears to be a Latinx community, a Latinx school, and the surname of the individual who shot perhaps from that community. And so maybe that nixes out. Maybe there was no racialized motive. But there are too many guns in the hands of people who are either mentally ill, who have been radicalized by some sort of anti-this or that group, some sort of hate belief system. There are too many guns in the hands of people who shouldn't be able to pass a basic criminal background check, and we need to address that. Reform of these laws does not mean that we're coming after law-abiding citizens' right to bear arms.
Right. Thank you, Stephen. CBS has another update on what's happening in Texas, the aftermath of this horrific shooting. 14 dead, my understanding, 13 elementary students and one teacher. We'll have the very latest for you coming up on CCO. Paul Douglas in Studio A at CCO will keep you up to date, up to the minute, with what's happening in Texas in Uvalde. 15 dead, 14 elementary school children. It's hard saying that out loud. Murdered in cold blood, and one teacher, 18-year-old shooter, is dead. He was armed with two weapons, one rifle, and one handgun. And more information is coming out, and we will keep you posted. I'm joined by Stephen Belton, Urban League Twin Cities, who's also an attorney and a pastor, a well-rounded human being. So glad to have you with us, Stephen. I wish you could be here under different circumstances. We invited you to talk about George Floyd and what, if anything, we've learned, how we've evolved, how we've improved in 2 years. Of course, the news of the day. Thank you for your perspective on that as well.
Absolutely. It's good to be with you. There does seem to be kind of an odd through line between George Floyd and the events of today, which is just the prevalence of violence in our society, and in some ways, the ways that we have become inured to it. We're, of course, horrified in this moment. But I'm just thinking about how quickly the news cycle moves from, as I mentioned earlier, we are still, you know, recovering, still getting our breath back from Buffalo.
From Buffalo, yeah.
And now we've moved on to this next violent incident in the same way that in the aftermath of George Floyd, we moved on to yet another killing and another killing and another killing. And the through line seems to be this violence, this disrespect, disregard for human life. And it's appalling and it's alarming. And of course, at a very visceral and human level, it makes one wonder, you know, what our place is in the world and what is, you know, makes it as a pastor. I hear people often say, where's God in the middle of all of this? And you have to wonder. It's a legitimate question. I can answer that. I have my own answer for that.
We live in a flawed world,
we
right?
We live in a flawed world. We do. And I think God is in the outrage that we continue to feel. God is in the sense of loss in the way that we empathize and connect with those families, even though you and I don't know anybody. At least I don't think we know anybody who's personally connected with the tragedy that just took place in Texas. But we still feel it.
We empathize. I can't imagine. You're going to have 15 funerals, including 14 funerals, for little kids who did nothing wrong. They're guilty of going to school.
Yeah.
It's just heart-wrenching and mind-boggling and maddening. And again, what is it going to take? Sandy Hook, 27 were dead, including 20 children. 20 kids were murdered.
Right.
To my knowledge, I may be wrong, but this is the biggest school shooting, at least elementary school shooting, since Sandy Hook, Connecticut. And you talk about, and this is an incendiary topic, you talk about gun rights and Second Amendment rights. I, too, believe, acknowledge Second Amendment rights, but I don't think everybody should have a gun. I just don't. And if do you think people who are mentally incapacitated or have some sort of mental disorder should have access to guns?
Yeah, of course not. Nor, you know, it strikes me that we probably put people through more rigor in testing just to get a driver's license
than
we do for some states to be able to own a handgun. And, of course, the consequences are far more deadly with the ownership, are potentially far more deadly with the ownership of a handgun. So.
You're here today, among other things, to talk about George Floyd. 2 years tomorrow since we lost George Floyd. And I saw a statistic today that made me do a triple take. Unarmed African-Americans, three times more likely to be shot by police nationwide than unarmed people with white skin. I mean, we still have that divide.
Yep.
And when it comes to accountability, 25 police and sheriff's departments around the country have paid out more than $3 billion in the last 10 years for citizens wrongly injured or killed by the police. So, you know, payouts to family members, is that going to solve the crisis? And there is obviously a lot of push to get real police reform and at the same time balance that with public safety. How do we thread that needle?
Yeah. So first, let me go back to something you mentioned earlier. These payouts, they really aren't accountability, and they certainly aren't justice. I remember when I was practicing law, I used to tell clients that the only thing that a lawsuit can do is transfer money from one account to another.
Right.
But it won't give you a sense of relief. It won't give you a sense of justice. It won't give you a sense of completion about these issues. And so even for the families of the people, certainly for the victims where they survived these killings or these shootings, there's no real sense of justice. There's only monetary gain. And there really isn't any sense of accountability because even in the city of Minneapolis, we've paid out thousands, millions of dollars, actually, not thousands, but millions of dollars for wrongful police actions. But it hasn't stopping them from occurring. That's what accountability does. All it does is saying that you're being held financially liable for this. But it doesn't stop the thing from happening. So you ask, what can we do to change this system around police accountability? It is a complex system, but it begins with things like having, I'm pushing very hard for believing that we need to have police have professional liability insurance. We also need to address their licensing issues. I saw that the Minnesota Police Officer Standards and Training Board, also called the POST Board, just this week addressed some new issues that are going to tighten up licensing and make police officers, their licenses will become liable, and it will be a lot easier to yank their licenses when they have been found to have committed some wrongdoing. Before, they had to have been found guilty of a felony or of a series of misdemeanors. Now that is not the case. And so reforms happen on a variety of levels. But they also begin by addressing the culture of policing itself. We need reforms in the police departments. We need to be able to address the ability to discipline officers. We need to address recruiting. We need to be able to talk about things like, you know, the training that police officers get to be able to address their own implicit and inherent biases. There are people who are pushing for reforms like residency requirements, requiring police officers to live in the communities that they patrol.
Is that a good idea?
I think it is a good idea in the abstract, and perhaps over the long term, I don't see any immediate or any short-term kind of benefits occurring. But I do think it's hard to argue with the basic logic or the mother wit, if you will, that if you know someone, if they're your neighbors, you're going to be less likely to over-police them, to subject them to extraordinary violence if you know them, if you have a relationship with them. So I think that can help. But again, I don't see it being a short-term kind of a benefit.
2 years after George Floyd cried out, "I can't breathe," are African Americans in this nation breathing any easier? I mean, do you see any progress or not?
So I would caution against it, and I would caution against speaking to what African-Americans generally believe. I can speak from my own perspective and from your, you know, from the Urban League's perspective. What I'm seeing and what I'm hearing, the answer is no. I think people are feeling more activated, more vigilant, and that's a good thing. We have, you mentioned earlier, a lot of citizen journalists now, cell phone journalists now, people who feel activated. People are looking at their cell phones differently now as if it's a potential weapon to address police violence. But in terms of feeling safer, no, I don't, you know, I'm not, I wouldn't change the talk. You asked if I had grandchildren, not yet, but if I had grandkids and they were of a certain age now, I wouldn't change the talk.
You have to, and again, remind listeners, what is the talk?
The talk is a conversation that African-American parents or parents of African-American kids have to have with them when they get to be about, you know, adolescents, to explain to them how they need to behave in public when they are confronted by a police officer in order to come home alive. In order to protect themselves. And I wouldn't change the talk. I wouldn't relax and change. And I don't know many parents who are saying, I no longer feel like I have to have the talk. I think people are feeling like if something happens, if their children are killed, if there is a, you know, an untoward, a violent police action now, that there possibly will be more accountability. I think there will be, there are more tools available now, but I don't think people are feeling like it's not going to happen again. I think we're just sort of bracing for the next incident.
Stephen Belton, Urban League Twin Cities, thank you for hanging in there today with perspective on George Floyd, 2-year anniversary of his death coming up tomorrow in Minneapolis. That and this tragic story, another tragedy, this time in West Central Texas, Uvalde, west of San Antonio, 15 dead, including 14 elementary school students, in yet another mass shooting. We'll be back with more coverage on CCO. Paul Douglas back with you. Stephen Belton joining us from Urban League Twin Cities to talk George Floyd and another senseless, mindless, horrific tragedy, this time in West Central Texas, Uvalde. 15 dead, including 14 elementary school children. I saw this stat, Stephen, and it made me think, since 1776, 1.2 million Americans have died in war. 1.2 million. Since 1969, over 1.6 million Americans have died in gun violence. Mm. In our schools, on our streets. It's just a staggering number. And God help us if we become numb to this.
Well, I think we have become numb to it. So I think there's been I think our pity instinct has been repressed by the repetitiveness of these incidents of violence. And we see it on television. We, you know, read about it. We see it on social media. And we've become numb to it. And that numbness has made us complacent. To the point where we sort of accept it as, you know, as an inevitability. And, of course, it's not, Paul.
This is the price of doing business in America today. We're going to have, what, every day, every other day, another mass shooting, and somehow that becomes the new normal.
It can't be. And yet it is, because we aren't doing anything about it. We're not able to galvanize enough will and enough consensus about the way to do things. I understood that President Biden is planning to announce an executive order that will have some sort of gun control reforms.
Yes.
But the reason he's doing it by executive order is because we can't get consensus with our lawmakers.
But our politicians represent us.
And they do.
And a huge majority of Americans favor common sense gun laws. People who are mentally incapacitated should not be walking around with AR-15s. Most people would not argue that. A small fringe group might, but most of us agree.
Most of us agree, and it's not just a small fringe group. It's a very powerful lobby on behalf of that small fringe group. It's a gun lobby that believes that if they yield anything on this, if they give up a foot, they're going to wind up giving up a mile.
They're coming for our guns.
That's exactly right. And they have successfully parlayed that belief and that stance into effective fundraising, and that fundraising yields influence in Congress. It shouldn't, but that's the way it works.
Are you concerned they're coming for your guns? That if we reform, just common sense reform, background checks, closing some of the loopholes, people who are mentally incapacitated or make violent threats on social media maybe should not be armed?
No, not concerned about it, and they can certainly come for my guns since I don't own any guns. So, but I would also say that we're also looking about common sense things like having a registry of prior felons or people who have committed gun violence. That shouldn't, I don't understand why that's a controversial kind of deal. It's controversial only if you are of the mindset that yielding anything will yield everything.
The slippery slope
theory. It's the slippery slope. They're coming for our guns.
More with Stephen Belton about this tragedy in Texas and George Floyd 2 years later. Stay with us here on CCO.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Paul Douglas back with you. Jordana at the Mayo Clinic. She's in our prayers. DJ producing today. There is a press conference that is imminent coming out of Texas with updates, the very latest on this horrific shooting. I mean, every shooting is horrific, but 14 kids dead, one teacher at an elementary school, and the shooter was an 18-year-old. Another update from CBS coming up at 4:20, and our newsroom is on this as well here at CCO. CBS News has learned that the White House is going to be announcing an executive order tomorrow on policing, marking the 2-year anniversary that George Floyd was killed by former MPD officer Derek Chauvin. Now, this executive order may include collection of use of force data, a ban on chokeholds, and a restriction on no-knock warrants. Possibly a blueprint for future legislation. Joining us, Stephen Belton, Urban League Twin Cities, recovering attorney and pastor. Is there anything else I forgot to add? Grandfather?
No, no, not grandfather yet.
No grandfather?
Not yet.
Okay.
Aspiring grandfather.
Yes, well, when you least expect it, you get the news.
Isn't that the truth?
Good to have you here, Stephen.
Thanks. Good to be here. Good to be in studio.
Boy, I'll tell you, yeah, it's night, the whole face-to-face after 2 years of Zoom meetings, and yeah, I take nothing for granted. And the cap you have on, the baseball cap, it says, breathe love. And that's not a coincidence.
No, it's not. It's a war today with great intentionality. It's a slogan that's been adopted by my church and congregation, but obviously it has broad meaning for the society that we're in and for the moment that we're living in. with so much hate and so much, hate that doesn't seem to have a direction or purpose. And it's a time when all of us, I think, need to be reminded to breathe, and to breathe love in particular.
Take us back to that day 2 years ago, your initial reaction, the immediate aftermath. I mean, I was in a state of perpetual shock. First of all, that this murder, this execution took place in broad daylight, and it was videotaped, and that changed the world.
Yep.
I mean, how many of these happen, you know, in darkness, in the shadows, and we never hear about them? But what was your reaction to the death of George Floyd?
So I literally was awakened from my sleep by my persistent ringing of my phone. And I don't remember if it was phone or text, but it woke me. And I someone had sent me the video. And my first reaction, you know, this is at 4 o'clock in the morning or so, Paul. So I was hardly awake, and I it was disbelief. I thought for a moment that I was perhaps witnessing or viewing a meme or something, you know, something awful someone had put together. But it didn't seem real, and it wasn't that the actions themselves were surprising to me. It was that it was caught on videotape. That didn't seem real. And frankly, I was just moved to disbelief by the inhumanity of it. It just seemed so obvious that George Floyd was crying out for his life and was being ignored by the four police officers who were around him. And it was just disbelief at the inhumanity of the entire thing. And so shock and disbelief, and then very quickly anger.
And again, the word murder is a charged word, and I'm sure some people will push back and say, well, you know, the cop was just doing his job, right? Derek Chauvin was just doing his job. I still encounter some of that, not as much as I did 2 years ago. But just to remind listeners, Derek Chauvin was in fact found guilty of second-degree unintentional murder. He was found guilty of third-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter. Three other officers on the scene convicted of federal civil rights offenses. There was some accountability. We could argue whether it was appropriate accountability. The city of Minneapolis's $27 million settlement with the Floyd family did send a message to police departments around the country, around the world, that actions have consequences. And now with smartphones, citizen journalists, security cameras, webcams, what happened in the shadows, now more times than not is exposed. There is usually justice, however belated. Do you agree with that premise or not?
I don't know that there's usually justice. In fact, I would disagree that there is usually justice. I think in this case there was justice. Now, bear in mind, I'm not a relative of George Floyd, and for his family, for his closest friends, for his loved ones, no amount of penalizing the perpetrators, the police officers who deprived him of his life, is going to give them a sense of justice. But from a community perspective, I think that we have seen justice, and I think justice continues to be rolled out. We'll continue to have it because the trials are not over, particularly of the three officers who were not Derek Chauvin.
Well said, Stephen. Thank you. We're going to take an update here from CBS News about that. Another mass shooting, this time an elementary school in Central Texas. That's coming up next. Paul Douglas here. We joined the press conference underway right now in that mass shooting in Texas.
We have several injuries, adults and students, and we do have some deaths. The suspect is deceased at this point. DPS is assisting with the investigation. And at this point, the investigation is leading to tell us that the suspect did act alone during this heinous crime. Families are being notified, and we are providing services to them as the district should. As far as the rest of the district is concerned, safety measures were taken to make sure that we had a safe release for the rest of the district. throughout our city of Uvalde, and we had numerous law enforcement officers and agencies that assisted with the safety release for those students. We do want to keep all our families in their prayers. I hope you do as well. And we also want to respect the privacy of the family. Everything is still being worked on, and again, we'll notify the parents and the families as soon as we have some news for them. Thank you so much.
We greatly appreciate and patience with us. Please know at this time, we are only making a statement and we will be releasing more information as the investigation continues. We appreciate your courtesy. At this time, it concludes our press conference. Thank you.
That was a very brief press conference in Uvalde, Texas, west of San Antonio, in the aftermath of another shooting at an elementary school, Robb Elementary School. 14 dead, including one teacher. Adam Carter here in Studio A with more perspective. Hey, Adam.
Yeah, forgive me. I didn't get the name of that police official or the school official, but as you said, very limited information from them. The confirmation of the deaths came from Governor Greg Abbott about a half an hour ago, and that 14 children and one teacher at this Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, were killed after this 18-year-old man, apparently armed with a handgun and possibly a rifle, entered the school today and opened fire, killing these 14 children and one teacher. Motive not known at this point. The 18-year-old shot and killed by authorities after the fact. So we have a lot more questions as to about what happened leading up to this, what happened with this 18-year-old man. And CBS still obviously has a lot of investigators on this, a lot of reporters covering it, including some FBI contacts. Obviously, the FBI investigating this as well. In fact, I think we'll go to CBS here just a few moments to get the very latest from CBS News. Again, 14 children, one teacher dead in a shooting at an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas.
CBS News Special Report. Texas Governor Greg Abbott says 18-year-old Salvador Ramos opened fire, killing children and a teacher at a Uvalde elementary school.
He shot and killed horrifically, incomprehensibly, 14 students and killed a teacher. Mr. Ramos, the shooter, he himself is deceased. And is believed that responding officers killed him.
Police say the suspected shooter acted alone. Derek Gonzalez works nearby.
When we heard all this, well, all the neighborhoods started coming out and running to the school because we know everybody has family there.
One hospital says a 66-year-old woman and a 10-year-old girl are both in critical condition. One Customs and Border Protection agent was also shot in the head but is in stable condition at a local hospital. CBS News Special Report, I'm Steve Dorsey.
That was an update from CBS News on the shooting in Texas. When we come back, more perspective on the two-year anniversary of George Floyd's death with Stephen Belton, Urban League Twin Cities. That's next. Paul Douglas back with you on a somber Tuesday with the news coming out of Uvalde, Texas, west of San Antonio. 14 dead. My understanding, 13 elementary students and one teacher. Shot by an 18-year-old with an assault rifle, or a rifle and a handgun. Not sure if it yet, if it's an assault rifle. Stephen Belton is here to talk about the two-year anniversary of George Floyd, and I promise we'll get to more of that. But, Stephen, your reaction, something you told me when we were in the commercial break, resonated with me. Just the frustration. As a parent, as a grandparent, as a human being, you see these stories and you shake your head. I mean, what is it going to take?
Yeah, I honestly don't know. I know what could help, and that would be to have passed some meaningful gun control laws. And I need to say to your listeners that I am not at all an anti-Second Amendment person. I believe in the right to bear arms, but I also think that we need to be reasonable and responsible about that. 18-year-olds having access to assault-style weapons, and we don't know, it's not clear yet with the shooter in Texas what sort of weapons he had in addition to a handgun, but having access to weapons there, we need to be attacking this issue upstream. I had told you, shared with you, Paul, the story of, it reminded me of the story of the two fellows who were on the banks of a river and they're fishing, and all of a sudden a baby rolls by downriver, and they grab the baby and pull it out of the water, and then another one comes, and next thing you know, they're up to their ankles in water and their knees, and they're pulling babies out of the water, and suddenly one of the men gets up and walks away. And his friend says, "Where are you going?" He says, "I'm going upstream to find the son of a gun who's throwing babies in the water." And it seems to me that our reaction in this context is that we can either continue to pull babies out of the water, and literally that's what we're doing here in Texas, or we can go upstream and address the problem that allows people to attack the schools. I don't think the answer is to barricade our schools, to put more metal detectors in there. I think we need to go upstream to this issue, Paul, and begin to address meaningful gun control.
80-90%, I mean, depending on the poll you look at, a significant majority of Americans acknowledge the need for common sense gun reform. But even when you mention the word reform, yep, some people say, "Oh, they're coming for my guns." Yep. And they don't want to listen. What if Sandy Hook didn't do it? If this mass shooting at an elementary school doesn't do it, what on earth is going to get politicians off the dime?
Well, keep in mind, we are still haven't caught our breath from Buffalo, New York, where another 18-year-old shot 10 people, killed 10 people. And we don't know whether this was a racialized motive. What I've seen from the images on television is that it appears to be a Latinx community, a Latinx school, and the surname of the individual who shot perhaps from that community. And so maybe that nixes out. Maybe there was no racialized motive. But there are too many guns in the hands of people who are either mentally ill, who have been radicalized by some sort of anti-this or that group, some sort of hate belief system. There are too many guns in the hands of people who shouldn't be able to pass a basic criminal background check, and we need to address that. Reform of these laws does not mean that we're coming after law-abiding citizens' right to bear arms.
Right. Thank you, Stephen. CBS has another update on what's happening in Texas, the aftermath of this horrific shooting, 14 dead, my understanding, 13 elementary students and one teacher. We'll have the very latest for you coming up on CCO. Paul Douglas in Studio A at CCO will keep you up to date, up to the minute, with what's happening in Texas in Uvalde. 15 dead, 14 elementary school children. It's hard saying that out loud. Murdered in cold blood, and one teacher. 18-year-old shooter is dead. He was armed with two weapons, one rifle, and one handgun. And more information is coming out, and we will keep you posted. I'm joined by Stephen Belton, Urban League Twin Cities, who's also an attorney and a pastor, a well-rounded human being. So glad to have you with us, Stephen. I wish you could be here under different circumstances. We invited you to talk about George Floyd and what, if anything, we've learned, how we've evolved, how we've improved in 2 years. Of course, the news of the day. Thank you for your perspective on that as well.
Absolutely. It's good to be with you. There does seem to be kind of an odd through line between George Floyd and the events of today, which is just the prevalence of violence in our society and in some ways the ways that we have become inured to it. We're, of course, horrified in this moment. But I'm just thinking about how quickly the news cycle moves from, as I mentioned earlier, we are still, you know, recovering, still getting our breath back from Buffalo.
From Buffalo, yeah.
And now we've moved on to this next violent incident in the same way that in the aftermath of George Floyd, we moved on to yet another killing and another killing and another killing. And the through line seems to be this violence, this disrespect, disregard for human life. And it's appalling and it's alarming. And of course, at a very visceral and human level, it makes one wonder, you know, what our place is in the world and what is, you know, makes it, as a pastor, I hear people often say, "Where's God in the middle of all of this?" And you have to wonder. It's a legitimate question. I can answer that. I have my own answer for
that. We live in a flawed world,
we
right?
We live in a flawed world. We do. And I think God is in the outrage that we continue to feel. God is in the sense of loss in the way that we empathize and connect with those families, even though you and I don't know anybody. At least I don't think we know anybody who's personally connected with the tragedy that just took place in Texas. But we still feel it.
We empathize. I can't imagine. You're going to have 15 funerals, including 14 funerals, for little kids who did nothing wrong. They're guilty of going to school.
Yeah.
It's just heart-wrenching and mind-boggling and maddening. And again, what is it going to take? Sandy Hook, 27 were dead, including 20 children. 20 kids were murdered.
Right.
To my knowledge, I may be wrong, but this is the biggest school shooting, at least elementary school shooting, since Sandy Hook, Connecticut. And you talk about, and this is an incendiary topic, you talk about gun rights and Second Amendment rights. I, too, acknowledge Second Amendment rights, but I don't think everybody should have a gun. I just don't. And do you think people who are mentally incapacitated or have some sort of mental disorder should have access to guns?
Yeah, of course not. It strikes me that we probably put people through more rigor in testing just to get a driver's license
than
we do for some states to be able to own a handgun. And, of course, the consequences are far more deadly with the ownership of a handgun. So.
You're here today, among other things, to talk about George Floyd. 2 years tomorrow since we lost George Floyd. And I saw a statistic today that made me do a triple take. Unarmed African-Americans 3 times more likely to be shot by police nationwide than unarmed people with white skin. I mean, we still have that divide.
Yep.
And when it comes to accountability, 25 police and sheriff's departments around the country have paid out more than $3 billion in the last 10 years for citizens wrongly injured or killed by the police. So, you know, payouts to family members, is that going to solve the crisis? And there is obviously a lot of push to get real police reform. And at the same time, balance that with public safety. How do we thread that needle?
Yeah. So first, let me go back to something you mentioned earlier. These payouts, they really aren't accountability, and they certainly aren't justice. I remember when I was practicing law, I used to tell clients that the only thing that a lawsuit can do is transfer money from one account to another.
Right.
But it won't give you a sense of relief. It won't give you a sense of justice. It won't give you a sense of completion about these issues. And so even for the families of the people, certainly for the victims where they survived these killings or these shootings, there's no real sense of justice. There's only monetary gain. And there really isn't any sense of accountability because even in the city of Minneapolis, we've paid out thousands, millions of dollars, actually, not thousands, but millions of dollars for wrongful police actions. But it hasn't stopping them from occurring. That's what accountability does. All it does is saying that you're being held financially liable for this. But it doesn't stop the thing from happening. So you ask, what can we do to change this system around police accountability? It is a complex system, but it begins with things like having, I'm pushing very hard for believing that we need to have police have professional liability insurance. We also need to address their licensing issues. I saw that the Minnesota Police Officer Standards and Training Board, also called the POST Board, just this week addressed some new issues that are going to tighten up licensing and make police officers, their licenses will become liable, and it will be a lot easier to yank their licenses when they have been found to have committed some wrongdoing. Before, they had to have been found guilty of a felony or of a series of misdemeanors. Now that is not the case. And so reforms happen on a variety of levels. But they also begin by addressing the culture of policing itself. We need reforms in the police departments. We need to be able to address The ability to discipline officers. We need to address recruiting. We need to be able to talk about things like, you know, the training that police officers get to be able to address their own implicit and inherent biases. There are people who are pushing for reforms like residency requirements, requiring police officers to live in the communities that they patrol.
Is that a good idea?
I think it is a good idea in the abstract, and perhaps over the long term, I don't see any immediate or any short-term kind of benefits occurring. But I do think it's hard to argue with the sort of the basic logic or the mother wit, if you will, that if you know someone, if you're they're your neighbors, you're going to be less likely to overcommit, to over-police them, to subject them to extraordinary violence if you know them, if you have a relationship with them. So I think that can help. But again, I don't see it being a short-term kind of a benefit.
2 years after George Floyd cried out, "I can't breathe," are African Americans in this nation breathing any easier? I mean, do you see any progress or not?
So I would caution against it, and I would caution against speaking to what African Americans generally believe. I can speak from my own perspective and from from the Urban League's perspective, what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing, the answer is no. I think people are feeling more activated, more vigilant, and that's a good thing. We have, you mentioned earlier, a lot of citizen journalists now, cell phone journalists now, people who feel activated. People are looking at their cell phones differently now as if it's a potential weapon to address police violence. But in terms of feeling safer, no. I wouldn't change the talk. You asked if I had grandchildren, not yet, but if I had grandkids and they were of a certain age now, I wouldn't change the talk.
You have to have, and again, remind listeners, what is the talk?
The talk is a conversation that African-American parents or parents of African-American kids have to have with them when they get to be about, adolescents, to explain to them how they need to behave in public when they are confronted by a police officer in order to come home alive. In order to protect themselves. And I wouldn't change the talk. I wouldn't relax and change. And I don't know many parents who are saying, I no longer feel like I have to have the talk. I think people are feeling like if something happens, if their children are killed, if there is an untoward, a violent police action now, that there possibly will be more accountability. I think there will be, there are more tools available now, but I don't think people are feeling like it's not going to happen again. I think we're just sort of bracing for the next incident.
Stephen Belton, Urban League Twin Cities, thank you for hanging in there today with perspective on George Floyd, 2 year anniversary of his death coming up tomorrow in Minneapolis. That and this tragic story, another tragedy, this time in West Central Texas, Uvalde, west of San Antonio, 15 dead, including 14 elementary school students in yet another mass shooting. We'll be back with more coverage on CCO. Paul Douglas back with you. Stephen Belton joining us from Urban League Twin Cities to talk George Floyd and another senseless, mindless, horrific tragedy, this time in West Central Texas, Uvalde. 15 dead, including 14 elementary school children. I saw this stat, Stephen, and it made me think, since 1776, 1.2 million Americans have died in war. 1.2 million. Since 1969, over 1.6 million Americans have died in gun violence. Mm. In our schools, on our streets. It's just a staggering number. And God help us if we become numb to this.
Well, I think we have become numb to it. So I think there's been our pity instinct has been repressed by the repetitiveness of these incidents of violence. And we see it on television, read about it, we see it on social media, and we've become numb to it. And that numbness has made us complacent. To the point where we sort of accept it as an inevitability. And, of course, it's not, Paul.
This is the price of doing business in America today. We're going to have, every day, every other day, another mass shooting. And and somehow that becomes the new normal. It can't be.
And yet it is, because we aren't doing anything about it. We're not able to galvanize enough will and enough consensus about the way to do things. I understood that President Biden is planning to announce an executive order that will have some sort of gun control reforms.
Yes.
But the reason he's doing it by executive order is because we can't get consensus with our lawmakers.
But our politicians represent us. And a huge majority of Americans favor common sense gun laws. People who are mentally incapacitated should not be walking around with AR-15s. Most people would not argue that. A small fringe group might. But most of us agree.
Most of us agree. And it's not just a small fringe group. It's a very powerful lobby on behalf of that small fringe group. It's a gun lobby that believes that if they yield anything on this, if they give up a foot, they're going to wind up giving up a mile.
They're coming for our guns.
That's exactly right. And they have successfully parlayed that belief and that stance into effective fundraising. And that fundraising yields influence in Congress. It shouldn't, but that's the way it works.
Are you concerned they're coming for your guns? That if we reform, just common sense reform, background checks, closing some of the loopholes, people who are mentally incapacitated or make violent threats on social media maybe should not be armed?
No, not concerned about it. And they can certainly come for my guns since I don't own any guns. But I would also say that we're also looking about common sense things like having a registry of prior felons or people who have committed gun violence. That shouldn't. I don't understand why that's a controversial kind of deal. It's controversial only if you are of the mindset that yielding anything will yield everything.
The slippery slope.
It's the slippery slope. They're coming for our guns.
More with Stephen Belton about this tragedy in Texas and George Floyd 2 years later. Stay with us here on CCO.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Only at True North stores. New True Rewards members stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 15 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 30 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 40 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. This offer won't last. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store. Download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. Offer ends August 3rd. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Save up to 50% with minimum purchase at Blinds.com. And a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 50% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
but not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free Samsung 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.